Hello, and welcome to episode number 76 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. The so-called UFO phenomenon is a tricky affair because no matter when and from where you enter the discussion, you're inevitably going to face having your assumptions and expectations stretched to the max. Indeed, to those really paying close attention to, for instance, the wealth of experiencer data that's been amassed over decades, it's clear that a discourse around the nature of potential UFOs and aliens in our midst eventually leads to a much deeper rabbit hole where our place in the universe and the very nature of reality are in play. Of course, one of the biggest leaps those who entered this discussion face is the notion not simply that aliens exist out there, somewhere, perhaps in some corner of the vast expanse of the cosmos, but that they're here and perhaps have been for as long and undoubtedly even longer than we've been looking for them. But if that's true, skeptics ask, why aren't we finding clear, undeniable evidence for their presence? And for that matter, why don't they simply land on the White House lawn to put the matter to rest once and for all? It's absurd to think they're here, these skeptics confidently assert, but then choose this bizarre stealthiness. Absurdity, you say? Indeed, we've got that, in spades even. Welcome to the UFO phenomenon as it actually exists rather than how you'd like it to be, based on your 21st century Western expectations and assumptions. One of the largest and most questionable of which is the belief that if they were here, we'd be able to detect them with relative ease. Another major deep dive into the proverbial rabbit hole comes when one comes to grips that these various others are not only here, but are actually interacting with various human beings, and that this circumstance is much more commonplace than the mainstream media and present political set would have you believe. And even once you've digested that interactions really are happening, you're then confronted by just how diverse these interactions are. Indeed, they seem to cover the proverbial gamut, from positive encounters with supportive, inspirational entities to frightening encounters with beings who conduct obtuse medical procedures and examinations that seem, on the face of it, to be much more invasive than is necessary, especially if these beings are as advanced as they purport to be. Yet an even more paradigm-stretching matter arises when people hear of encounters with beings that humans come to find they recognize and even feel a pre-incarnate familial connection to. And often these encounters involve the person being reminded of a particular mission they are here in this incarnation as an Earth human to fulfill. Of course, this brings to mind for some people the religious notion of angels and demons, as old as human civilization itself. But these beings often arrive in spacecraft and have their own home planets. Are these the same entities as are reported in religious traditions, or different ones altogether? And how are we to make sense of these particular encounters from within the dazzling complexity that is the UFO phenomenon? These are the very matters we'll seek to disentangle in this, the 76th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. I'd like to begin this week's episode by reminding people that I also am part of another podcast titled Liminal Frames, which happens on the in-between weeks. So in other words, you can get it on the in-between weeks, again, on Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when it gets released, on the week's in-between POC episodes. That's Liminal Frames, and that's a conversational kind of format with my friend Nathan, and we cover topics similar to this and also cover religious history and other esoteric topics as well. Conversational and runs for about 90 minutes each episode. You can find that on my YouTube channel, Exoacademian. And if you're looking for a podcast, Liminal Frames is a dedicated podcast that has its own publication. So you want to look for Liminal Frames on your favorite podcast platform. Frames spelled with a PH, inspired by phenomenon. Okay, so today's topic, discussing interactions with beings, alien entities apparently, that people have a familial connection to. They somehow feel connected to these beings, and often they will remember having interactions with them, close, intimate interactions, from even before birth. And this often happens initially in early childhood, that they have these encounters and then remember sometimes having encounters from even before they incarnated as a human being. Now, specifically, this topic today is part of my ongoing discussion of a new cosmology, and there's a lot to it. It's very complex, but it's also coherent, but it's going to take some time to roll it all out. And since last week's episode, I've published two additional of these new cosmology truth nuggets, and number 10 and 13 specifically apply to today's topic. So I wanted to begin by discussing those. New cosmology truth number 10 says, sightings of anomalous phenomena sometimes serve as signal flares for human beings with histories beyond this incarnation and beyond merely human ancestry. The aim is to wake them up. In other words, these are strategic activation prompts. And then New Cosmology Truth number 13 states, a life review that comes at the end of a particular incarnation is not intended as a means to justify punitive action, but as an opportunity for a soul to have a transparent view into the impact of actions and experiences on a field of consciousness that is intrinsically connected. When people imagine punitive action in this scenario, they tend to see that as being at the hands of a God figure who is comparing their actions to a list of arbitrary do's and don'ts. But here the soul is left to consider the implications of actions and experiences on the field, quote unquote. So those are two important nuggets that apply to today's topic. All right, let's dig in. As I pointed out numerous times on this podcast, I think the evidence presented in the body of historical experiencer accounts suggests that what we colloquially call the UFO phenomenon is an amalgam of different groups with different agendas coming from different origins. Many of you familiar with my work will have heard me say that many times. That said, there's another key element to add to the mix here that is usually missed entirely in the public conversation around the discussion of UFOs and aliens. And that is stages of consciousness. In other words, not only is the UFO phenomenon composed of different groups with different agendas and different origins, but also, very significantly, working under different developmental levels of consciousness. Truth be told, this is the most central variable to be aware of here. And of course, agendas and levels of consciousness overlap. The higher on the spiral one's level of consciousness development is, the more one's agenda is underlined with an increasingly expansive sphere of concern, until ultimately, upon a truly non-dual realization, one sees no real distinction between other, any other, alien or not, and self. All sentient life is included. Now, it's worth pausing for a moment here to address a concern that is sometimes raised at this point, having to do with what some people see as a focus on human consciousness, as a kind of anthropocentrism. What makes you assume alien life would be anything like humanity, these people say? What makes you think their consciousness would have anything in common with our own? Well, here again, I would point such people to the body of historical experiencer accounts. Truth be told, many people raising that objection are not familiar with said material, and when they are aware of it, they quickly dismiss it. But what that expansive data tells us is that often these various others do have a consciousness not so dissimilar from our own. Are there good and bad ones? Well, in a shallow interpretation, yes, just as there are with human beings. But a closer, more nuanced, more realistic examination shows us that the various alien entities that are encountered cover a range from lowly to highly developed along a familiar spectrum of consciousness. And if you'd like to know more about that spiral of consciousness development, I covered that in depth way back in episode 9, which was titled Disclosure Dilemma, Examining the Impact of a Public Revelation of a Superior Alien Presence. Now, that episode was primarily focused on the varying levels of consciousness currently coexisting on the Earth amongst humans. The point being that asking about the nature of a singular planetary response to the disclosure of aliens in our midst is a largely incoherent question because the responses will vary greatly depending on the stage of consciousness a particular people group is working under. Indeed, there are three major different levels of consciousness coexisting just within the United States in 2022. So you can imagine how complex it gets when you consider the entire globe. Now, in that episode, I also pointed out that these steps along the consciousness spiral are predictable, and that's important. In other words, the sociological study of various cultures from around the world shows this repeated progression in consciousness. The steps are always progressive and always predictable. Importantly, these various levels of consciousness not only shape the way one interprets reality, but they also change the very way one sees and experiences reality. New capacities come online as people progress along the spiral. Now, when one pursues the vast experiencer literature available, a very similar picture emerges. People have experiences with beings that vary, but that can be mapped back to the same consciousness spiral. Indeed, what we see, really, is something like a foundational set of principles around consciousness that apply throughout the cosmos. Of course, this says something significant about the nature of reality itself, which, as I've stated before, I see, based on evidence arising in numerous diverse but converging fields of inquiry, is more like a collective mindscape or shared dreamscape. Very importantly and fundamentally, the reason why consciousness follows a predictable trajectory across the vast expanse of the cosmos, or perhaps better put, based on what we just said, across the mental construct of our shared dreamscape, is that all sentient life is ultimately a facet of the one underlying consciousness that is the bedrock of reality itself. All is one and all is God is another way to put that, though in the forgetting process that is part of the fragmenting that happens with the one cosmic intelligence as its subsets subdivide yet again, that awareness of being intricately and indivisibly connected to Source is temporarily lost. Importantly, that voluntary forgetting happens in order to encounter novel experience and the variable nature of complete free will and what it brings. And then through experience to contribute those lessons learned in terms of truth, beauty, and love back to the one ultimately undivided consciousness as part of its ongoing journey of self-discovery, self with a capital S there, a self comprising all of the sentient life in the cosmos. And again, in terms of our topic here, this holds true for all sentient life across the cosmos, whether human being, gray alien, or an amalgam of the two in the form of a hybrid. As I've already pointed out, the body of historical experiencer accounts, when taken in toto, paint a picture of encounters with beings that fall at various points along the spiral of developmental consciousness. That said, because negativity and fear tend to dominate our shared mindscape in Western civilization, the more negative encounters tend to get a lot of play. And by negative, I mean both encounters that really do involve encountering self-serving and thus seemingly malevolent entities, as well as more nuanced encounters that were at least initially perceived as negative because of the discomfort the sheer ontological shock produced in the body-mind experience of a particular human being. Without a doubt, abduction accounts involving seemingly uncaring, indifferent, business-like entities tend to get most of the press. But to those paying attention to the fullness of accounts available, there are decidedly positive encounters involving apparent history slash familiarity with beings that, in the experience of the person having the encounter, as we've been saying, seem to extend to a period from before birth, sometimes remembered from a time between incarnations, and sometimes remembered from a previous lifetime altogether. Interestingly, sometimes those previous lifetimes were not as a human being, and that's significant. This is a big part of the cosmology. A big part of what makes this so complex is not just the many others that are in our midst, but how even human beings coexisting on the earth do not have the same constitutional background. Of course, knowing that some of these encounters have a familial feel to them and sometimes involve memories of a human being being a different kind of entity in a previous lifetime certainly complicates, or to co-opt a Jacques Vallée phrase, makes more interesting the question around us and them, and puts a new wrinkle in the ongoing mystery of the UFO phenomenon. To make better sense of what is entailed in these kinds of encounters, let's consider a few that I personally am aware of. In each of these, you'll find some unique elements, but also an overarching theme involving purpose that cuts across all of them. The first case I have that relates to this episode's theme involves a man who was injured by way of a wayward gunshot. This happened when the person was a child. While they were being rushed to the hospital, they found themselves on board a craft outside the Earth's atmosphere, looking back at the Earth. Now, during this part of the encounter, the person felt no pain from the gunshot wound, but was in fear of these decidedly non-human-looking beings. Sensing his fear, these beings communicated telepathically that they meant the person no harm, that they were there to help him indeed. They assured him that despite the severe injury he had suffered, he was going to be okay. In fact, their communication went much further than that, for they told him, again telepathically, that they had known him from before he ever came into this incarnation as an Earth human, and that they were always watching over him. Interestingly, this person then began to feel very distant memories surface, where he did indeed know these beings, or it seemed so. This feeling of familiarity was startling to his rational mind. And while in the presence of these beings, they also reminded him that he had a purpose on the Earth, a mission, if you will, that would become clear to him later in his lifetime. Sure enough, that sense of calling or vocation, if you will, did become clear to him decades after this early childhood encounter. Now, some people might hear a story like this and assume what we're talking about here are not ETs or aliens, but angels. Well, that designation might fit, except for the fact that they proceeded to take this person on a space voyage to their home planet during this encounter. And after spending some time there and communing with them, they returned him to Earth, again via a trip in their craft, at which point he awoke in a hospital bed where he eventually made a full recovery. So as you can see, these beings seem to defy our traditional categories. They act in ways that seem angelic on the one hand, according to most people's understanding and or assumptions, but they also had a home base on another planet and traveled via an apparent spacecraft, which is more typical of conventional notions of extraterrestrials, i.e. biological alien entities. I think a third category that collapses both these notions is a better fit here, and I will describe this transcendent category later in the podcast. A second case that shares these overarching characteristics of encounters with benevolent entities that seem strangely familiar arises in an experience that someone shared with me that also came about following a childhood accident. In this case, the individual had swallowed paper while her parents were in another room. They came back to find her blue and on death's door. But while this was happening, she found herself in the presence of what she described to me as light beings. And just to clarify, she was just a baby at this point, but she remembers this encounter. And sure enough, she realized they were familiar, familial even, just like with the previous case I discussed. And she felt connected to them, and that they had known her since before this earthly incarnation. Now, interestingly, she was cogent enough to explain that she really didn't want to go back, that her baby body was too constricting and difficult to maneuver with, which is funny when you think about, but quite apt. If you really had memory from before being a human being, then a baby's body would seem very cumbersome. But they then reminded her that she was on Earth for a purpose, specifically to help people. And soon after, she was returned to her earthly baby body, where her parents had just managed to clear her throat, and she soon made a full recovery. Now, earlier on, I mentioned, in thinking about these kinds of encounters, that conventional notions of angels and aliens don't quite fit the bill. On the one hand, these are very positive, benevolent, helping kinds of entities, seemingly like guardians. So in that sense, they fit the angel category. But then they often arrive in spaceships and supposedly come from home planets. In fact, sometimes they even take people back to their home planet. And so that doesn't really fit with angel. It sounds more like ET, extraterrestrial, or alien. So how do we make sense of this? I think a lot of it comes down to this notion of non-duality, which I've been mentioning a lot in this podcast, especially over the last few months. Now again, depending on the background and the interpretive grid of the experiencer, they may or may not fully grasp this notion. In other words, even when you have an experience with beings who basically exude this sense of non-dual source, you don't necessarily interpret it that way if your grid isn't prepared for it. In other words, again, along this line, this spiral of developmental consciousness, the particular consciousness stage of the person right now when they have the experience matters as well. In other words, if you're nowhere near a non-dual understanding, then sometimes even when you have an experience which exudes non-dual characteristics, you won't necessarily interpret it that way. In fact, I know people who've had these kinds of encounters and wrestled to come to grips with it, and sometimes feel this overwhelming sense of violation because their sense of self is transcended in these encounters. But rather than tuning into this non-dual connection they have with these others, they rather see it as a kind of violation and a loss of their sense of self. So again, if you still have a very attached sense of ego, a very defined sense of ego, who I am in this body, mind, in this lifetime, and I came from these parents and I live in this country, and that's really solid and well-defined for you, and you have no notion of being something beyond that, then often you will not be able to ground these experiences, not in a way that is truly non-dual, even when, again, the attributes of the beings being interacted with suggest this very kind of reality. Now, in the next case we're going to discuss, you'll see this come front and center. And in this case, this person wrestled for years, decades even, trying to make sense of his encounter, and eventually did arrive at this non-dual source. And it's because it so resembled what he picked up from them. He had a short experience with them, and yet it was so mind-blowing, so life-changing, that he spent decades trying to track down what this meant. And ultimately, that's where he landed, at this sense of non-dual source, everything being connected, everything being one. Indeed, that is the name of his book. He titled his book about his experiences, One. And I'd like to discuss that now. And by the way, for those of you interested, I also covered this case in depth in episode number 39, titled The Veil Between Worlds, Yossi Ronin's Encounters with Aliens and Experience of Non-Duality. And that's whose case we're going to discuss next, Yossi Ronin. Now, I already mentioned how sometimes these encounters with these various beings seem to completely collapse and transcend our notions, our pre-existing notions or conceptions. That happened in a very interesting way here as well, and not just because of this realization of non-dual source that Ronin eventually came to as a result of these experiences directly, but also because initially he had an encounter with these beings in a dream state. He very clearly knows that he was dreaming, and he encountered these beings in a dream, and it was playful and enjoyable, and it was something to think back on in a refreshing way. But then he awoke and heard strange sounds in his apartment in Los Angeles, and then realized the beings were there in the room with him. It was no longer just a dream. They were in his waking state as well, which is very interesting. And again, it shows you how our notions of this really hard line between dream states and reality, set in quotes, is not nearly as solid as we would assume. Again, this very much fits with what I've been saying, that even our waking state is very much a shared dreamscape, a mind space, if you will. But of course, it's one thing to encounter these kinds of beings in a dream state. We're prepared for this to some degree. We have our guard down. But when we encounter these strange non-human beings in our waking state, alarms go off. Our evolutionary state goes into fight or flight, and we don't know what to do. It's very discombobulating. It was very shocking to Ronin at first, and really it took him decades to come to grips with it. Now again, as I said, it took Ronin some time to really ground this experience and to arrive at a new understanding of reality as a result of his experience. But eventually he did get there. And it partly came even as he observed closely now, with a new lens, so to speak, his everyday world. And I want to quote now a section from his book, One. Quote, "In my regular state, every object around me seems separate from the other. The tree is distinct, apart from the ground, and likewise air, sun, and so on. But now, as some resonance to the experience of sharing all my different senses jointly, I was seeing the same connection that had always been there, all around. Now the trees are a clear continuation of the ground below and of the sun and the air above, without any intermission or pause between any of them, like one continuous body. The trees were nourished by the earth. The food and the water that nourished it flowed through the trees as well. So they were, in fact, a direct continuation of the ground. Sunlight descended and permeated the leaves, merged with the water, and became part of the plant. The tree was also the condensation of the sunlight. The light flowed through the leaves downwards, descending right into the heart of the earth, along with the roots and making it fertile. One complete cycle of life traveled from the ground below to the sun above and back down again. Sunlight met with the earth and the water in each leaf, where they connected as though making love with one another. Fire and water converged into one, giving life in the process. I looked at the tree leaves right in front of me. Then I went deeper into feeling the sensation of the leaves at the top of the tree, which faced upwards to the blue sky. And for the first time ever, noticed something else. The tree was conscious and in a deep continuing state of thankfulness for its existence and for the light he was receiving. Unquote. Now, I already mentioned that his initial contact came in a dream, and then he awoke to found them in his apartment in his waking state as well. What's interesting is they find other ways to communicate with him through dreams later on, which again, from my perspective, speaks again to the fact that there is not this clear distinction, that these are just different modalities, and we can go back and forth between them, toggle between them, and they are both equally real in some ways. And what's more important is the lessons we learn and how that changes us and how we contribute that back to the totality when we move between lifetimes, carrying that deep wisdom, even if we don't always carry the direct memories. Now, this is another quote in the book where Ronan talks about later dreams he had. Quoting from the book again, quote, "During the time from the first meeting to today, the visitors have come up with several dreams designed to help me understand and cope with the contact. They differ completely from ordinary dreams, being clear and detailed, not like my subjective dreams. For many years now, I continue to explore the depths of these dreams." Unquote. This is what the visitors said to him in one of the dreams. Quote, "Communication from us given to you is other than language. Our way of thinking is different from yours, but our communication nevertheless exists. The communication that passes from us to you is fully understood only for the deepest part of your consciousness, a place that is currently almost oblivious to you. It's the place from which your choice of thinking arises. In this primary space of consciousness, you are connected to us and all the life around you. This deep and hidden part of you does understand the information from us, since it is also a kind of language, language of the One. When you become physically aware of your thoughts, it is only after it already takes the shape of words, emotions, or a picture in your mind's/brain's language. At this point, you are forced to translate and convert the deeper unconscious oneness experience into separate dual concepts to understand it through separate essences, such as a point in time, point in place, distinct shapes and figures, and separate words or names for them. Your mind/brain makes it through finding close associations and memory in your familiar world." Unquote. And again, I can completely relate to that. If you think back to some of the experiences I've shared in recent podcasts, I have a very similar kind of experience where an immense amount of information is immediately granted to me. And I know initially, kind of symbolically, exactly what it means. And it's very extensive information. But then I have to, in sharing it with others, break it down into individual concepts that I can share in a linear format so that it is understandable and comprehensible in terms of how we usually communicate. But again, initially, it all comes in one go, and it's symbolic usually, and yet I know multidimensionally what it means. So I very much understand what he's talking about here, and I understand the process we go through to then be able to translate it into 3D reality. Now, in Ronan's encounter, just like the other ones we discussed earlier, he eventually gets to the point where he realizes he had his first encounter with these beings when he was a young child. And they then tell him about why they showed up to him then and how that connected to who he was as an adult and how it connected to this sense of mission or purpose. And now we'll jump to a point where he's recalling a childhood experience with these others. Again, his defenses were down more because he was a child. And often people do have more of these encounters when they're children because they do have their guards down, because it is not so outlandish to the rational mind, which hasn't really developed at that point. And fight or flight is not the only response we have when we're children. That sense of wonder, that sense of open-endedness is still there. And that allows us to experience reality sometimes in a deeper and broader way than we can as adults. And sometimes having those encounters is partly about planting in the mind, in the body-mind experience of the person, some sort of familiarity with that experience so that when they do have the more traumatic, ontologically shocking experience as adults when the rational mind is online and fight or flight is the usual response, so that they can begin to ground it more and move past that fear. Now, quoting from this part of the book, quote, "We have chosen to do it like this so that your consciousness, now within a child's body, can easily store this encounter for many years inside of your body. You will not think about this experience or try to understand it. Then the memory of these moments will remain intact, behind the defensive walls that your adult body and mind will create over time. There is a possibility that in the future, when you are older, you will remember this experience and be able to translate it into the words of a mature person and maybe use it." And then Ronan says, "Me? Use it?" And then they say, "Yes, the memories of this reunion will serve you in the future. In the first phase, the reunion will serve you for yourself. If you choose to speak about it, it will also serve others in your world, and it will serve me and us in my world as well, and eventually also the other dimensions," unquote. And that last part is really key. I've talked about this as well. We have interpenetrating dimensions, and they're interpenetrating in the sense that they also interact and impact each other. When we talk about nuclear weapons and why some of these others have said that there are impacts in other dimensions that we are not aware of, because this interpenetrating nature of reality is just that way. And we are kind of foolishly doing this not only to our own biosphere, but being completely unaware of the damage we're doing in other dimensions. And far beyond just the notion of atomic weapons and what that does, I've mentioned before that whenever we even have a thought or we act on a thought, we are sending energy between dimensions. That's one of the notions I understood in my contact experience, was that these dimensions are interacting all the time. We are being impacted by them, and that makes us make decisions differently sometimes. And likewise, the decisions we make, the energy we exude into the world, for good or for bad, also impacts these other dimensions. And sometimes these other dimensions also involve different incarnations of us, different iterations of us. So again, like I said last time, it's not so much necessarily about multiple lifetimes lived in a linear way, one after the other, but sometimes these different aspects of ourselves are online at the same time, if you will. That's one way to think about it. Really, time doesn't exist here. But it's very complex, but it makes us all the more, or should make us all the more, self-aware and self-cognizant about our decisions and the actions we take, because the ramifications are much more widespread and far-reaching than we realize. And that's exactly what these others were saying to Ronan in this experience when he was a child, implanting these memories that would serve him when he was an adult and could translate those into adult rational thinking. And now I'd like to close with a few additional thoughts for your consideration. Hearing about these kinds of encounters, it's understandable that some people are left feeling perplexed, overwhelmed. After all, as I already stated, so often people are presented with a few static and clearly defined choices. Aliens, meaning strange-looking extraterrestrial entities here to conduct scientific experiments or medical examinations. Or angels and demons, spiritual entities who manifest an awesome appearance to humans who feel fright at the mere sight of such beings, even when, in the case of angelic celestial entities, they come with good news. But the cases we've discussed today defy these simple, clearly delineated categories. Sometimes people encounter beings that have the benevolent demeanor and intent of conventional notions of angelic beings, but they arrive in spacecraft and seem to originate from a planet, as do we. Other times, as in the case of Yossi Ronan, they suddenly appear both in dream states and or in waking states, defying yet more supposedly clearly defined categories of human experience, without needing to traverse great expanses via spacecraft. But yet they can still, in the blink of an eye, take a human being to their home planet. Indeed, that's what happened with Yossi Ronan. Without the need of spacecraft, they took him to their planet and then brought him back home, all via the power of mentation or thought alone. Now, how are we to make sense of this diversity of experience of otherness? Well, the first thing we should be clear about is that our traditional notions of how these things work is simply insufficient at best and woefully misleading at worst. Here again, we're back at a term I often discuss on this podcast, non-duality. This, as I've said many times, is central. It seems like a simple term representing a fairly simple, singular idea. Everything is one, all the way up and all the way down, and that any sense or form of separateness is relative and ultimately illusory. And yet, in most people's experience, fully embedded within this illusion, this is much harder to grasp than one might first assume. The thing is, as one moves further and further into a stage where this awareness really holds sway, rather than appearing as a brief flash of insight that later fades amongst the bombardment of everyday mundanity, beings begin to change their behavior. They do so because the very way they see themselves, and by extension, everything and everyone else, has evolved. They now have a felt, lived, fully embodied experience of being connected to everything and everyone. And as such, they begin to act in ways that might look to us angelic. In other words, they seem decidedly benevolent, having our best interests in mind and acting in ways that work to that end. But importantly, some of these beings get to this place while walking out a relative existence just like us. And as they proceed as individuals and as civilizations, they grow both in technological prowess, hence the advanced spacecraft witnessed, while also growing into an advanced stage of consciousness development. Again, we're back at the spiral of consciousness development. At this advanced stage, the technology is there to aid their call to service, and they are not serving because they were programmed to do so, as is typically depicted of angels who are said to be immortal but also lacking some of the experiential qualities of mortal beings, but rather because this has become part of these embodied beings' felt sense of self-interest. They have a desire to serve us in the same way we might have a desire to help our own injured hand when we've injured it by caressing it with the other hand. It's the same notion in terms of how they think about us versus them, inseparable, ultimately indivisible. Importantly, this is not to say the more traditional depictions of angels are simply antiquated and quaint fantasies. These notions also point, if not perfectly, to real entities who are intimately connected to the one cosmic intelligence and who do differ in composition and nature from these other kinds of beings we've discussed, who begin as biological entities, who then ascend to a place of service and to a felt sense of cosmic siblinghood via the process of mortal, quote-unquote, experience. The lessons we can draw from encounters such as those we've discussed today are at least twofold. Firstly, a huge part of the reason why disclosure is so much more complicated than many first realize is that it involves the eventual public awareness of a vast assortment of beings existing on numerous planes or dimensions of existence. These various interpenetrating planes or dimensions represent gradations of graduations, populated by various beings all partaking in novel experience and learning via their reaction to it through their expression of free will on a quest towards ultimate union and reunion with cosmic source. Now, amongst the complexity of these various types of beings, even humans currently present on the Earth, as I already pointed out, have different compositional aspects to their backgrounds. Some have histories involving incarnations as other kinds of entities, hence this connection on a familial level with some of these various others. Secondly, the significant takeaway from this overarching cosmology is that we are all here for a purpose, despite what the preposterous message of the reductionistic materialist model would have us believe. Ultimately, the sooner we wake up to this fact, the sooner we can begin to embody that purposeful presence and thus move our own energy forward in such a way that helps to directly determine our next incarnation, which, as we've already discussed, is a win-win both for us and for the cosmic community at large. And why? Because as both the ascended masters of human history and these various benevolent others have already made abundantly clear, in the most ultimate sense, these are not two. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.